Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, we talk to Jamie Wallace, the social entrepreneur behind the online walking route finder, walkit.com. The interview opens with Jamie talking about how he conceived the idea of Walkit.
Well, the genesis of Walkit as a concept, the thing I habitually refer to is chatting to colleagues in an old employer of mine, and we were working near central London, and we used to bomb around London going to various meetings, and I could never convince my colleagues to walk these various meetings, even though we were often quite close to them. And the response I'd get back is, don't be silly, it's going to take me far too long, or, yeah, I might quite like to do that, but I have no idea how to get there. In London, people are happy underground because they've got that beautifully designed tube map, which is a work of genius in many respects, but highly misleading in terms of geography.
Why did you want to walk? You have a fear of the tube?
Latterly, yes. I think maybe the older you get, the more intolerant you become of crowded tubes. And it wasn't something which occurred to me when I was younger. Yeah, I think one grows more weary of things like that. Personally, I wanted to get out. So you could be in sunlight, you could be in daylight, you could be more... There's also an issue of, and this is quite individualistic, is also being more in control of your own sort of destiny walking. You're not at the mercy of some system out there. So there's lots of issues around that, which I haven't fully explored myself, to be honest. But, you know, the pat answer is that, you know, it's healthier and you're doing a bit fight climate change and local air pollution or whatever. But there's lots more around it, the sort of psychology of it, which... Yeah, which I haven't sort of necessarily got that deeply into.
So a little bit more about how Walkit came about.
When I was trying to persuade these colleagues to walk, I thought, well, what tools are there out there to help me make a more informed decision? And there weren't many. In London, we've got Journey Planner, which is a pretty sophisticated tool and does do walking, ultimately, if you force the system, but it doesn't champion walking as an option. And, you know, these other online tools, StreetMap, Multimap, Google Maps, various other things, really don't give walking routes as an option at all, or rather badly.
And the A to Z,
and the A to
we
Z.
All fall back on.
Is, the A to Z is fantastic, of course, but it doesn't give you that sort of personalised information. You've got a whole... I mean, the benefit is you've got a whole of London, but that can be a disbenefit in that you've got lots of pages to sort of rummage through.
But also the major roads are disproportionately represented in the atlas, aren't they? So
yeah.
Walking routes are often,
sort of marginalised. And what I think a key factor is this time issue. People overestimate how long it's going to take you to walk somewhere, and you're not really going to get an idea of that from the A to Z. And it's often in London, tube is a bit of a safety blanket, and that you know it's going to... You're going to go in at one point, and you can be damn sure you're going to pop out at another point, and the system will do it for you. Whereas on walking, you're on your own a bit, and you've got to try and work it out for yourself. And you can look at an A to Z, but people struggle with that. And we're just trying to lower the barriers to entry, or whatever jargon you want to use, in terms of people shifting that behaviour to, well, maybe I can walk, and if I've got a little blue line on a map which I can follow, and some text directions, then that makes it easier.
How did you start from just having the idea of that's what you wanted to do?
With a lot of difficulty, because I've not got a technical bone in my body, really. I had to find people to make this happen for me, because I couldn't do it. And it was just a question of chatting, talking endlessly to people, saying, well, this is what I want to do. Who should I be talking to help me make it happen? And that was a lengthy process.
How long did that take?
Probably a couple of years.
Until anyone sort of signed up and said that, yeah, we'll help you.
A couple of years before I found the people who both seemed to have the skills and were sort of well disposed to the concept. I think there were more people out there who could have done it, but were more larger established consultancies who would have charged me an arm and a leg and didn't really see the mission behind what I was trying to do.
Okay, well, tell us a bit more about the mission.
Well, in simple terms, it's just to get people walking more in urban areas. And we're not too judgmental about why they do that. It could be health, it could be speed, it could be a green thing, it could be convenience. It could be convenience in terms of you can pop into things on route.
And how will you measure your success?
Well, we've done some online surveys, and these are sort of self-nominating people, so it's not statistically robust. But people who have actually filled in our form, nearly 90% are saying we've encouraged them at least once to change to walking from another mode of travel. So that's great. And then we've sort of dug down a bit more, and we found that over half for any given route are saying they're moving away from trains, buses, taxis, cars. So they're moving from a mode where they're sitting on their bum to a mode where they're walking. So that's over half. So that's what they say. But if we're getting more people out there ultimately walking, that's success.
It sounds all terribly altruistic. Is it truly altruistic?
Well, in terms of making money, you'd have to say it's altruistic because we're not making much money at all. I want to see ultimately behaviour change. That's what interests me, because I just think there are much better ways of organising our cities and getting people from A to B in more relaxed, convivial, healthy, environmentally friendly way. And I'm a big believer in cities as making them positive, sustainable places to live rather than places you want to escape from. Currently we're a not-for-profit, but we are actually going to, we're in the process of becoming a conventional company, and we've just got to work harder at making the figures stack up. So no, I'm much poorer now than I was working for my old employer, which was a charity as it happened.
Where do you gather the information from? How does the website generate a walking route?
We license the road network from a big global supplier. So we have the whole vehicle accessible road network. We buy that in. And you can do some basic fine tuning very simply by switching off one-way streets. All the turn restrictions are irrelevant to a pedestrian, all that stuff. So you do that and you've got a very, very basic pedestrian route plan. Then, of course, you're missing all the stuff in terms of routes across parks, by rivers, canals, etc., etc., stairways, all sorts. And we do our best to integrate as much of that as possible from aerial photography. And we quite painstakingly take that off the aerial photography and integrate it into our road network. And that gets you up to another level of sophistication. And then the next level, which we haven't maximized yet, is really using your users' local knowledge, because they know that little patch a hell of a lot better than anyone else, and much better than we can ascertain from aerial photography. So we really try and encourage people to feed that information back into us.
And how can they do that?
We're only scratching the surface in terms of user feedback mechanisms. They could be greatly improved, and that's one of our big challenges.
How broadly is WalkIt available?
Only in 6 cities currently: London, Birmingham, Edinburgh, Leeds, Newcastle and Derby. We've just launched in Derby because we've got some sponsorship in Derby. Glasgow's coming up, a few other cities. What we want are the biggest cities in the UK by the end of 08 this year.
Who are the sorts of people who are wanting to be involved?
Very mixed bag. Our first sponsor, we got some grant money initially to just a proof of concept from Unlimited, the Foundation for Social Entrepreneurs, which they got their money off the lottery. Our first sort of sponsor of our own was a company in Newcastle, and they said, okay, we'll sponsor your launch in our city. But latterly it's been more public sector. So in both Derby and Leeds it's been a mixture of the city council plus sort of match funding from people like the RDA, the Regional Development Agency, or in Derby it was the NHS put some money in. And that's the trend currently, is more public sector. Now they've got all these targets to hit in terms of active travel and promoting walking and congestion easing and climate change and healthy lifestyles, so we can help deliver some of them.
And what would be the ideal for you if people were listening to this and they said, oh, this sounds like a really good initiative, how can we make it happen and help Jamie Wallace to achieve his ends?
Well, if you're a rich philanthropist and want to give us some money, we'll take that. I think what we've got to do is make it much more of a community and get much more sort of user interaction, make it a much more engaging website for the user, and that they feel a sense of ownership. And for us to do that, we've just got to make it a lot more sophisticated in terms of people, how people interact with us, and that requires development work, which requires money. So we're slightly chasing our tails at the moment in terms of spreading our geographic coverage, getting it out there, but not improving the functionality of the site.
How long has WalkIt been evolving?
As a little sort of germ of an idea in my head, I think we're going right the way back to about 2000. In terms of the site first going public in quite a major way, when we got a news item on the BBC news site, that was September 06 for the London site. So it's been a long gestation process.
And at the moment, the future cities that you might bring on board are really determined by whether someone stumps up some funding for you.
Yeah.
You haven't got a list of the ones you want to get next.
The cities with the most enlightened thinking on this are the people who are most receptive to what we're doing. Longer term, we'd love to do some European capital cities. And we've had inquiries from North America as well, and Australasia. So,
can you explain a little bit what the user gets, actually, when they come to visit the site?
At its most basic, well, almost in its entirety, the site is very simple. You put in point A, and that can be a postcode, a street name, or a point of interest, like Buckingham Palace or whatever. And you put in your point B, similarly, and you press go. And we generate a pedestrian route map between those two places with written instructions.
And you give an option, which is, oh, this is the most direct route, and this is the more attractive or scenic.
We've been working on that, and the most direct would be the shortest in miles terms or kilometres terms. Plus, we have what we've called a less busy option. We stayed clear of saying nice or scenic, because that's very subjective. What we've decided to do is favour any route which is pedestrian only, i.e. something which goes through a park, and disfavour what we know it to be a busy road, which will be likely to be highly trafficked. And we've got that through our base data. We know the sort of class of road and the basic traffic density. So then we have an algorithm behind the scenes which works out, well, we've got to try and avoid that one and favour that one, and we give what we call a less busy route.
You've cannily created a way in which any organisation can put a link into the WalkIt site.
That's what we want to encourage, is, you know, most websites have a how to find us section where they'll merely talk about the tube stop or the train station or the bus or the nearest car parking. And walking seems to be the sort of Cinderella of transport modes on the how to find us section. So we're trying to encourage people to put a little device on that bit of their website with their postcode pre-populated within our little device. So all the user has to do is put in the postcode they're coming from, press go, and they get a little route map.
In terms of WalkIt's impact, do you think it's had an impact yet?
I'd be very disheartened if it wasn't. Probably give up. Anecdotally, we get a lot of feedback saying, wow, I've wanted something like this for years. Thanks so much for having produced it. And we've got much more of that than I anticipated. I mean, personally, I hardly ever, and this may say more about me than the issue, I hardly ever write into a website and say how thank you very much for your service. But we get quite a lot of that, and that surprised me. So I think we touched a nerve there. Of course, we are preaching to the converted sometimes, in that they will indicate in their little bit of feedback that, you know, I'm a great walker and you've just made my life a bit easier. But we also get a lot of things, feedback saying, yeah, this is great because I wouldn't have walked unless your service was there. So that's very important to me.
What do you think is happening with walking per se? Do you think there is a genuine increase in the number of people wanting to walk? There are lots of government initiatives and health initiatives to try and encourage people to walk. And do you envisage there are going to be many more walkers and users of WalkIt?
I hope so. I think there are so many converging trends now in terms of climate change and the health agenda, and you're seeing those linkages being made much more explicitly now, as well as energy security and all that kind of thing, which people on the fringes were talking about 5 years ago, and it's now seems to be becoming much more mainstream in a sort of policy sense. Whether that turns into implementation is still unknown. I think the signs are there that it's got to be a favourable environment in which for walking to prosper. And TfL in London has done some. We have our ups and downs with TfL, but they've done some pretty progressive thinking on the, you know, the business case for walking and the business case for cycling. Because, you know, the cost of expanding the tube network to accommodate more people is vastly more expensive than the equivalent cost of getting the extra amount of travel via walking or cycling.
What sort of reaction have you had from existing walking organisations?
We're talking to all of them. I think they're slightly... You know, we've just emerged from nowhere, I guess, as far as they're concerned, some of these NGOs who are very established. So I guess they've been a bit biding their time and working out who this WalkIt bunch are and what their motivations are, and that's fair enough. But just today, in fact, I was talking to Sustrans about potentially doing something in partnership with them. So that process is becoming a bit easier, but it's taken time.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? Where do you see WalkIt.com in 5 years' time? Transport for London might have a monopoly over the Olympic athletic stadia, but they're not going to have a monopoly over Weymouth or over other places where large crowds and large numbers of people are going to. Would they be perhaps places to tackle as well?
We have got a meeting in the diary with the ODA next month, so we're going on to talk.
That's the Olympic Delivery Authority.
Yeah,
right.
So we're going along to talk to them. But you're right, I think at the end of the day, the default option for anything in London is likely to be Transport for London. So maybe, and this is what we found, is that our opportunities are much greater outside London.
You've got the Commonwealth Games 2014
in Glasgow. Yeah, well, we're launching in Glasgow shortly, and I think that was a sort of background motivation for them, is to be seen to be having all the sort of right tools and services up there for the spectators. And then, yeah, opportunities outside.
So, and you said you're in Edinburgh, so I mean, I suppose the next thing festival. Is to have all the festival venues.
Yeah, we did that last year.
Oh, you did?
We put them all in. The problem with somewhere like Edinburgh was we did that off our own bat with grant funding, not in partnership with anyone. Whereas what we found is in Leeds, we got quite involved with the council, and they have so many sort of tentacles into media and networks that they can really push Walk It quite successfully, and we don't necessarily have the resources or the knowledge or the networks.
Well, Leeds is also, I think, the city with the highest population of students, and students are not necessarily the ones that can afford to travel up other than on foot or bicycle. So
yeah.
So you might have a winning option there too.
Yeah, we've already had feedback from the university, and it seems to be popular there. So in 5 years' time, I always fly slightly by the seat of my pants. I haven't got a big game plan, but ultimately what is seeing a transformation in cities so that the pedestrian is placed much more at the heart of not just transport policy, but all sorts of planning policy.
So are you able now to sort of start lobbying local authorities by saying that, you know, we would like, we're having people who want to walk to these places and there aren't routes for them to walk, so how about creating those routes?
That's sort of in the background of my game plan, definitely, is that once we've built up a sort of critical mass of users and feedback and survey work, you can really start using that, I think, quite powerfully as a weapon in your armory and take it to government, take it to the decision makers and say, come on, you're not providing the facilities for these people or the options for these people. And you can sort of leverage on that mass of users in a slightly more campaigny, got to be a bit careful here, but in a more sort of political way, perhaps.
You've got this disability lobby that one could look to.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've no idea whether your routes are accessible.
We haven't got into that. It's just resource terms. We'd love to, you know, step-free access and inclines. There's so much we could do.
Well, I always remember those cycling guides, you know, if you're going to cycle this route or that route, remember the prevailing wind. But in terms certainly of incline, that's critical, isn't it?
Well, in my conversation with Sustrans this morning, we did get onto prevailing wind, and it could be a factor. You know, it'd be quite a crude thing to put into our algorithm because, you know, it changes on a minute-by-minute basis, let alone yearly basis. But you could put some, you know, the prevailing wind for this long street is X, and that, in terms of sort of calorie burns or something, it would have a slight impact. But incline, yeah. I mean, the data is out there. It's just a question of buying it and shoving it into our system.
Are there any particular walks you'd really recommend?
A classic in London, anything connected with the river is such a fantastic resource in London. And at long last, or certainly over the last 10 years, the people's realisation of this as a resource has grown, both sort of municipally and in terms of individuals, and much more effort's been put into making it into a good walking route. So anything involving Waterloo Bridge on that bend in the river where you can see up to St Paul's, and just if you look over Hungerford down to Houses of Parliament, has to be pretty high in my estimation.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities. In this episode, you've heard from Jamie Wallace. If you have any views on this interview or on any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Please follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes at talkingwalking.net.